And we're back. This is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. We're on SoundCloud, Taylor-Report, and we are on Facebook / The Taylor Report. And we hope you will check these things out, if you, as I gather many, many do. And we're going to be talking, I think, shortly with the bluesologist Norman Otis Richin. Are you there, Norman?
No.
Bye. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. The sun is out. I just want to get you, in case, you know, you have a few minutes to dash outside. I can't promise it'll be there in 30 minutes.
Oh, no. I was out earlier, and I was in, I had a nice walk, and it was tolerable.
Refreshing.
Yes, tolerable today. Yes, sir.
Good. Now, Norman Otis Richin is, as I already said, a bluesologist, and has written very often on this subject of black history, and particularly the concept of Black History Month. And then most recently, you've had a good title for this, which is What's in a Name? You know, there does tend to be a renewed discussion of its significance. So when you put it that way, what's the answer to your own question?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to talk about the bluesologist that influenced me. It was Gil Scott-Heron, I think, that really popularized the term bluesologist. But, mm-hmm. You know, Jane Cortez, the late Jane Cortez, considers herself a bluesologist, and the Boots Riley, uh-huh. The rapper, considers himself a bluesologist. And, you know, the whole question of bluesologist, it's in the tradition of black history. Mm-hmm. And black history started as Black History Week, mm-hmm. in 1926, and it was began by a young man by the name of Carter G. Woodson. And we must remember that in 1884, 1885, the imperialists carved up Africa like a turkey, mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they had to tell the, you know, the white supremacist lie that black people were basically inferior in order to justify the treatment of African people. Mm-hmm. And of course, they were treating other people of color the same way. And Carter G. Woodson basically came up with the concept of Negro History Week in 1926. I guess some people say it was at that time corrective history, you know, basically correcting a lot of the lies. But
the lies and the suppressed information, right? I mean, people did not know that there was such a thing as black Reconstruction, because when it was crushed, it was also buried.
That is correct. Well, there's a guy by the name of Kumasi from the Black Organizing Committee, and he wrote one time that who owns history? Not even the ones who made it. Mm-hmm. I think that was a point you were just getting ready to make, that you just made, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to have been a case of, you know, of not only promoting white chauvinist history, but to make sure that that people were eliminated from history. In my memory, I mean, there are those outstanding things, Black Reconstruction, but it was also the black soldiers who fought in the American Civil War. That was another piece of information which the fight for black history is the fight for history, right? Because if you get the history right, then you realize what happened in times of slavery, but also in the war that eventually led to the ending of slavery.
Well, I think that John Hendrick Clark basically said that African history is the missing pages of world history. And I tend to agree with Gerald Horn in terms of this whole question of the black fighters fighting for our imperialists. We could have there could be a big debate about that, because I think that the African soldiers that fought for America, mm-hmm. The African soldiers that fought for France, the African soldiers that fought for Britain, we were basically used. I mean, it was like African people. The Battle of Dien Bien Phu is where the Vietnamese crushed, well, didn't crush, they defeated French imperialism. Mm-hmm. And if we realized who was on the front lines, fighting against the French, it wasn't little white guys from France. It was mm-hmm. Africans from Wolofs from Senegal and people from Mali. They were on the front lines, and I know a lot of people that fought on the front lines. Black African Americans who fought on the front lines in Vietnam, and even the when the Africans went, I used to get into a lot of arguments with people about this, but even when the West Indian Regiment went to be the West Indian Regiment were used to go to put down the Ashanti Wars in Ghana. So, we did. That is a contradiction in the history of that's a contradiction of that African people have to. We did that. That's part of our history. And the whole question of the Buffalo Soldiers mm-hmm. Were used against the Buffalo Soldiers are a bad thing, not a good thing, in my judgment.
Mm-hmm. When you speak of that or using that expression, there are different historical contexts in which that term was used. But are you referring to the period where black soldiers were employed in the American Southwest?
After the
American Civil War.
Bob Marley did a song, Buffalo Soldiers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think the Buffalo Soldiers, I guess some people could argue they were due position, but the Buffalo Soldiers were used against to suppress the liberation of African people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of now of the course of the matter that Carter Woodson made the fight, and by the way, it was a political fight. He wanted an annual. He began with the idea of a week each year. Is that right? And they agreed on the month of. He thought the month of February because of the birth of Frederick Douglass, and I believe Abraham Lincoln.
The thing about Carter G. Woodson is that Carter G. Woodson, basically, the concept of having it in the shortest week and shortest month of the year, that's a fallacy because basically he wanted it to honor Frederick Douglass and to a lesser extent Abraham Lincoln. But it was supposed to be a purpose of say, for example, you would take the Haitian Revolution and you would study the Haitian Revolution, mm-hmm. and then in February, you would study it for a year, and then in February, you would present papers and, poems, and the kids and mm-hmm. adults would get together in churches. That's another thing, in churches and not just political rallies, but all places, and present your information. So, for example, you would learn about the history of Toussaint Louverture, Dessalines, Christophe, as well as the women who mm-hmm. made history in Haiti, because Ezili Danto pointed out to me that it was Dessalines' mother that taught Dessalines how to fight. Mm-hmm. And, Dessalines was the one that really led Haiti to independence because they tricked Toussaint Louverture and he died in prison, but the Dessalines mm-hmm. took mm-hmm. the country to freedom, and mm-hmm. it was his mother basically that taught him how to fight. Mm-hmm. And we don't get that particular part of history. We always look at basically the Haitian Revolution was a one man affair that Toussaint Louverture liberated Haiti, and I'm definitely not putting Toussaint Louverture down. All I'm saying is that mm-hmm. It was the people of Haiti, including the women, mm-hmm. and Toussaint Louverture was definitely a great historical figure, but we have to realize it was, history is not made by one man or one woman.
Yes.
It's a thing, yeah.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately, one of the aspects of the promotion of statues and individuals is that it becomes a kind of ritual of reciting a name. It's like the problem we all have, or I hope we are beginning to have with it, the notion that Martin Luther King only gave one speech, and it was I Have a Dream. When he gave hundreds of speeches, he wrote, and he, of course, had a wonderful book, Why We Can't Wait, and Letters from the Birmingham Jail, which we might all benefit more from saying, why don't we have a month talking about his writing or about the book Why We Can't Wait?
Oh, and the question about Martin Luther King is that at the time Martin Luther King, when he died, he was public enemy number one. J. Edgar Hoover had tried to discredit him, and even there was an element, of course, you know, a lot of people get mad when I say this, and they can get mad again, but there's a classes among African people and some of the sellout black folks. King was at an all-time low when he died. When I say an all-time low, he was not loved by everybody. And, you know, some of the so-called civil rights leaders basically told Martin Luther King to stop talking about all this international stuff. You know, basically, we made a deal with the imperialists that we would not criticize them as hard as we wanted to if they gave us certain concessions, that we would basically talk about the Negro question only within the confines of the United States. So definitely we have no problem with the it's not our position to talk about what's happening in Vietnam. It's not our position to talk about what's taking place in Ghana and Guinea and in Asia, the Bandung Conference. We basically keep our mouth shut about that and praise the liberal white folks who gave us this little breathing space. So we're not really.
Yes.
It's only you communists that talk about that international stuff.
That's right. Well, you know, I love the fact that you're bringing to light, which is that the notion that. That the person who now everyone wants to celebrate was loved and given all the kind of respect. When in fact, you take Muhammad Ali, he was reviled and he couldn't even earn a living as a prize fighter. He couldn't get in the ring. He was not allowed. And years later, everybody acts as though we all agreed with him. Well, there was no agreement, and there was he was in physical danger. And he touched on the Vietnam nerve better than anybody by saying he got nothing against people who didn't use racist words toward him.
Right.
And what a revelation that was, that the president of boxing, the greatest fighter on earth, said, I don't have a problem with Viet Cong. That was a moment in history. And then, of course, there's Malcolm X, who there's a boulevard, I believe, named for him in New York. There's certainly a lot of other places where he's known, and now there are statues. And you and I both know he was not at all loved in the terms of the state. And there was great division of opinion, actually, in the black community as to who he was and what he represented.
Oh, yeah, but King thing, the King was, like I said, he was public enemy number one among the, he was killed, in the April of 1968. And, I mean, if you go back, and J. Edgar Hoover was going into his private life and,
yeah, he sent him his own suicide note, right? They wrote it out for him. Here's what you're going to write. You're going to say, I did these bad things, and now I'm going to kill myself. The FBI wrote it for him and sent it to
correct.
Him.
That is correct. That is definitely correct.
Yeah, kind of important part of Black History Month, isn't it?
Yeah, but the whole question that, you know, in the 60s, it basically, you know, all the banks were talking about, first of all, it went from this week, then it went to a month, and all the banks. You went into the banks and you could see the kings and queens of Africa. And that was during a time when, I guess once you take a scientific position, I guess kings and queens at one point in history were, they were good. Mm-hmm. But we're not promoting feudalism. We're looking at socialism leading to communism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not the king and queen thing. So you go into these banks, Royal Bank, and I shouldn't even mention their name, but you go into these banks, and all of these banks had the kings and queens of Africa. And, you know, some people say, all right, you know, like basically, instead of talking about the history, we need to talk about the liberation part of history. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we should basically talk about Ya Asantewa in Ghana, who fought against the British imperialists. We should talk about Queen Nzinga in Angola, who fought against the Portuguese imperialists. Mm-hmm. We should talk about Jonathan Jackson, Kotari Galdon, who fought against the prison system in California. So therefore, we should basically, while the enemy is trying to build up, build up people like Lincoln Alexander, we need to talk about people like Jean Daniels, who was a black woman in Canada, led demonstrations against George Wallace when he came to Toronto in 1964. We need to talk about the fact that to kill Garfield Sobers, Garfield. So Garfield Bellefont in 1953 in Toronto. When we talk about the liberation, the history of liberation, we need to emphasize that and let the banks talk about, you know, the kings and queens of feudal Africa, because we live in a capitalist system, and we're trying to transform the capitalist system into. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to set up a situation where we have an egalitarian arrangement. We're fighting for the liberation of Africa, Africans, and all oppressed humanity, period. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we should be about.
Well, the names Charles and Hetty Roach and Dudley Laws were all at the forefront, and they were Pan-African and socialist.
That is correct. That is correct. Charles
one of the founders of Caravana. People don't know this. He led them. He led a Caravana right down Yonge Street, and before the mayor and the police department decided they should put it behind a fence on Lakeshore, but Charles said, "No, this belongs to the community," which, by the way, in Brooklyn it does.
But here we have this special thing. People don't realize that Charles had a relationship. There's pictures of Charles Roach and Yasser Arafat. That's another thing problem Charles had with the state was, I mean, you know, you're not supposed to support the Palestinians, but Charles Roach, I saw the picture. I don't have a copy of it, but there's pictures of Charles, you know, he met with Yasser Arafat and, he met with all of the leaders of many of the leaders of the Caribbean and Africa. He was one of the foremost Pan-Africanists in this country.
Definitely was. We're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond. And Norman, one little event today, there always has to be one like this because it shows why we need Black History Month, why we have to fight suppression of information. I see that the Boston Fire Department thought they would mark Black History Month by celebrating the white coach of the Boston Celtics, Mr. Auerbach. And so they put up a picture of Auerbach and said, that was their little way of saying, isn't it wonderful? And by the way, they've already apologized and taken it down, and now somebody found them a picture of Bill Russell. And they said, oh, yes, Bill Russell, who, of course, was a victim of racial harassment in his own home in Boston while he was giving them a championship team for them.
Well, can I talk about Bill Russell for a second? Bill Russell is, Bill Russell had a brother by the name of Charlie Russell who wrote a film called, well, he was a playwright. He wrote a play called Five on the Black Hand Side, which was turned into a movie. Mm-hmm. But Bill Russell was and is a no-nonsense character. And I think young people need to know that at one time, the great people of Boston, I shouldn't put it on all the people, some of the racists in Boston, they broke into this man's house and defecated. You know, that's the correct word for S-H-I-T on his bed.
And wrote graffiti on the walls.
Right, yes. And, you know, Bill Russell is... was and is a no nonsense guy, and I mean the people of Boston is not a nice place. I've been there a few times, and they have a problem with we people who are darker than blue, and anybody that has any kind of melanin. Boston is a problem if you have some melanin.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is interesting. I'm really glad his name comes up, because you're quite right. Bill Russell is a non-demonstrative man, in the sense that he keeps his opinions and whatnot to himself. But when it turns out he has them, and if he wants you to know what he thinks, you will you will be told. And when Muhammad Ali got into a major jackpot, that was one of the great moments, because Bill Russell came to his side together with many other black athletes, Jim Brown. But
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
But people knew that Russell was not the kind of guy to be, you know, make any very few public displays. Because I think he understood, just like when he was on the court and when he was a coach, you had to be an impact player. And he was an impact guy, because when he stood with Ali, that was a great, great moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was in Monroe, Louisiana. Yeah, he was born in Monroe, Louisiana. It's his birthday. I think his birthday is today. Today is his birthday. Well, either today or yesterday. He was 84, I think. Yeah.
Well, we're going to claim it for today, because this is the Taylor Report, and we want to be the ones to say happy birthday to Bill Russell on celebrating Black History Month. Norman, we're very grateful to the time you've given us. We look forward to talking more about all these things, and we thank you very, very much.
I thank you very much. I'm looking forward to talking to you again.
All right, thank you. That's Norman Otis Richmond. This is The Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM, SoundCloud, Taylor-Report, and Facebook /The Taylor Report.